I'm Cody from Game Life Balance US, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the one you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other geeky podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1...
This is it. The part of your week where you get to put your headphones on, relax, and listen to a bunch of geeks geek out about geeky things. They're passionate.
As a Canadian, I will say that more than likely, I'm just going to get screwed another way. That's the way it always works.
They're knowledgeable.
Maybe that's where life began on MU69. We don't know.
And sometimes they're a bit angry.
Skype, I'm breaking up with you. It's not me. It's totally you.
Gunna Geek Productions presents the official GunnaGeek.com show.
Welcome to season 222 of the official GunnaGeek.com show. I am Stephen Jondrew, and with me, of course, is the wonderful Chris Farrell.
We're glad you guys could join us after our mid-season hiatus.
No, it was our season hiatus, because this is season 222, and joining us for season 222 is the all-new Stargate Pioneer.
That is because each episode is so long that everybody considers it a series.
So why are you all new this week, SB?
Because it's 2018.
No, you're not new, but you got a new little thing for the video. For the audio viewers, SB now has a thing on his mic flag. It's a little bobblehead of some form.
Yeah, it's the Ms. Marvel bobblehead. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that movie when it comes out in 2019. But, you know, this is a couple years in the making, because a few years ago, I used to have bobbleheads on my mic as well. So I just decided to, for 2018, to bring it on back.
What happened to your Spider-Man you used to have on there, Chris?
He's right here.
Oh, okay. He's just slid down a little bit. I got you now.
I got to find a better place to put Spider-Man. That's the problem. I haven't quite figured it out.
So how was your vacays? It's been a couple of weeks since we were around, and even longer since we recorded. How did everything go?
Everything went swimmingly because I didn't have to talk to you.
You know what? That's what most people say, actually.
That's harsh. Mm-hmm. I like it. Mm-hmm. Well said.
It's fair. Yeah. Chris, thank you for doing the show with me. I heard that it's just you and I now.
That's right. It is the Steven and Chris show. Occasionally guest starring one Stargate Pioneer.
Okay, so joking aside, we're burying the lead here. There was some exciting news that SB wanted to talk about, wasn't there?
Yeah, so I am going solo now with Better Podcasting.
Not that news, the other news involving our other host.
The other news, which would be congratulating our co-host. Is that what we're doing here?
Absolutely.
Are we doing it now?
Yeah. So yeah. We just want to
congratulations, Steven.
No, joking aside, okay, here's the thing. For years, this guy here, yours truly, has been setting the stage for this.
I see. He's going to make this all about him now.
Years in the making. I've been working hard. I've been coming to his house, whispering in his ear occasionally, and I've been saying to Chris, why aren't you engaged? And so this past week, it all paid off because, 2 weeks, this past couple of weeks, it all paid off because the one and only Chris Farrell is now engaged. So congratulations, Chris Farrell.
Thank you, sir.
So this is the mistakes that can be made when you don't have time to podcast and, you know, you're trying to fill up your free time with other things. All of a sudden, you find yourself engaged. And I'm sorry, Chris. We took that week off and we shouldn't have. I'm sorry, man.
And yeah, in the chat, by the way, Suncast would like to know, when are you and SP getting married?
Tomorrow.
Well, it depends on when he gets his divorce from Naki finalized.
No, seriously, congratulations on that. It's very exciting times, and SP and I were both very ecstatic to find out about that, so congratulations.
Well, thank you, sir.
Now, let's go ahead and move into our news. Here we go!
Thank you.
This first news point is quite the exciting one because it has to do with the wonderful way of Google. If those of you who have a certain Google voice assistant at home, you might want to just go ahead and mute it because I'm about to talk about how awesome the Google Home is. In fact, Google recently published that in the recent months, they've seen a significant increase in their Google Home sales. Now, how much do you think the Google Home sales have gone up in recent SP?
Are we talking percentage-wise or unit-wise?
I just want to know unit-wise. Let's take a stab at that.
15 million.
A little bit off on that. Chris, do you want to take a guess?
10.
You price is right at me, Chris.
It is 10. You're right. It is 10.
I totally $1'd you.
No. Google came out and said that they have, since the Google Home Mini was announced basically and launched, they have sold a Google Home every second.
Okay. So, but how does that compare to the other voice assistants?
Well, that suggests about 6.4 million speakers since the Mini's debut at the end of 2017. So that's quite the change. And I got to say that it's pretty good to see because while I do personally like the Amazon voice assistant myself, quite like her, I do like a little bit of stiff competition. So it's good to see that this has increased. Now, I have to say that I'm not surprised because that cheaper price point is hugely appealing. And in December, they did run a pretty darn good promo, at least in Canada. They were selling the Minis for like $35 or something like that. So it was quite a savings. However, I still do like the Amazon voice service device a lot better myself. But, you know, they're making money. They're selling these devices. They're listening in on us and they're going to milk all of that data.
Well, I know over the holidays that Amazon announced that the Echo Dot, I believe, was their most sold item on their website. So I don't know how much that is. Are we talking 15 million, 20 million, 3 million? I have no idea. But it was their most sold item, and they were running a promotion as well, down to $25, $30 itself, which is something that normally sells for about $50. So I could see how these unique devices at a low cost are entry drugs for people to put in their homes.
There's a lot of people seeing that now because, like Suncast said in the chat room, there's a lot of assistant devices being announced at C2E2 right now. In fact, I saw a few different new Amazon voice services devices like integrating the light switches and light bulbs and things like that. So it's going to be very interesting to see where the digital assistant market evolves. I mean, hell, there's even some PCs that are going to be coming soon with Amazon voice services built into it. Now, it's not coming to all Windows 10 stuff yet, but I'm sure we can crack it and figure out how to make it happen.
You know, I will say this, that all of these things coming out are interesting to me when they use an existing platform. I'm not wild about the idea of all these other platforms coming out. Yeah, I even think Apple was too late to the game. I just don't like all of these things
Apple
coming out.
Apple was first.
No, they were first. However, that's like saying Microsoft was first because they had Cortana. It's not the same. Apple had Siri, which was not to the level of what Amazon does as far as integration with smart home stuff goes.
Well, remember, what kicked things off was Siri on the smartphones, and then everyone wanted the digital assistant on their smartphone. That's when you got the weird Samsung one that eventually morphed into Bixby. That's when you got, Google Now, which then morphed into Google Assistant, which is about to morph into something else. And then out of that spun the idea that Amazon had to build their own digital assistant they could use to basically sell stuff and then make it easy to integrate Internet of Things devices into it. So Amazon took the basic idea and kind of ran with it, morphed it into their own thing.
I think the idea of actually having a device right there is completely different than on your phone because it's more practical. It's right there. So
remember, they did build HomeKit into recent generation iPads and into what's the device I'm thinking? The TV player for Apple that I'm just losing.
Apple TV.
Apple TV. Wow. I'm rusty, guys.
Man, he gets engaged and he starts losing brain cells immediately. By the way, the Apple Home device still is not out as we podcast on January 8th, 2018. The Apple Home, which is the equivalent speaker of an Alexa Echo or a Google device, Google Home, I believe it's called, it's not out.
No.
They don't have a product.
I know. And that's what's really weird to me about it. And that's why I say they're too late to the game, because it's a different use case. Like there's a lot of Apple users who already are getting these other devices, whether it is a Google Home or a Amazon Echo. So very interesting to me to see they're still compliant coming out.
Funny enough, the Microsoft One version of Amazon Echo is out now. Their Harman Kardon speaker with Cortana built into it. Here's a good idea of how well it's selling. It's already half off on the Microsoft Store online.
So order yours now. This episode of the GoToGeek.com show is not brought to you by anything.
It'll go great with your Windows phone.
Now I'm sad.
Oh, well, since we're talking about sad stuff, let's continue on with sad stuff. MH370, this was how many years ago now, SP?
Well, MH370 disappeared on March 8th, 2014, so it's coming up on 4 years. And remember, they ran a search for quite some time, didn't find anything, and they called it off. Well, Malaysia's government on Saturday, January 6, 2018, said that it has approved a new attempt by a private company to find the wreckage of the Malaysian Airlines Flight 370, also known as MH370, nearly 4 years after the disappearance sparked one of aviation's biggest mysteries. Now, the company that is embarking on the search is called Ocean Infinity, and they dispatched a search vessel on January 2nd, 2018, and it's called the Seabed Constructor. And it's going to look in the southern Indian Ocean, but in the northern expanded search area for debris of the plane on the ocean floor. Now, it had 227 passengers, 12 crew members. So, of course, the families are incredibly interested in this continuation. Now, what they did is they mapped the debris fields that were found that were washed up on shore. They charted it versus currents over time. They also took a look at the satellite communications data that they were basing the original search area on. And they determined that it's more than likely north of where they were looking, but along the same arc pathway based on the satellite information. So this will be interesting to see if they find it and if they don't. Another key indicator that they might be a little bit more serious here is A, the search is no cure, no fee, which means they don't get paid anything if they don't find anything. Another thing, they are bringing to bear more advanced technology. Now, before they were running one, maybe two drones or underwater sensors, they're running eight simultaneously. So they're going to be able to cover a lot more of the ocean floor, and they're going to be able to dive deeper with these sensors or these drones than they were able to before. So there is a possibility that they ran over in the previous search the debris and just didn't see it because the drone that they were using malfunctioned or was too high or too low, lost signal, whatever, was diving too deep. So there is a possibility that the northern search area won't turn up anything, but I doubt it. And the other thing is that they could use this same contract to go and look over the original search area, but with eight drones, they're going to be able to do this a lot faster, and we're going to get results a lot faster. So another interesting thing, there is this entire Reddit thread that is devoted to tracking the vessel on a daily basis. Now, if you know anything about marine vessels, and by marine vessels, I mean anything that is commercial related, could be a fishing boat, could be a oil tanker, could be a freighter, could be an oceanic research vessel, which is basically what this is. And you can ping off their, I believe it's Inmarsat. It might be something else. I don't know. I'm not entirely adept at exactly what they're tracking, but there are a lot of marine tracking websites out there that you can track any ship, and you can track them by their ID number. You can track it by their call sign or their name. And sometimes they're out of reach from the search radars or pinging or whatever is going on. But most of the time they're in it, and you can actually track their path over time. So there's an entire Reddit thread, and I'll throw it in the chat room right now, that is going to be tracking the process or the progress of seabed constructor as it undergoes its search in the northern search area on the southern part of the Indian Ocean.
I always got to say that this is very intriguing to me because it's like we still haven't gotten anything and we live in a more technological time than ever, right? Like, it's surprising to me that we still couldn't figure this out. I don't understand. I guess, you know, you nailed it. Maybe they just missed it, but I look forward for sure to the day that they end up finding some form of conclusive information if that happens.
This is very, very, very deep. It's part of the deepest parts of the oceans in the entire world. It's not the deepest point in the world, but it's if you take a look at how deep it is, it's really deep and it goes over an entire expanse. And there's not a lot of mapping of the ocean seafloor, so they didn't really have a lot to go on. And there was the technology of being able to sense that deeply. There was also the fact that there was no indication when they were originally searching for this exactly where the plane went down. I mean, it took months just to get the satellite data out, and then it took years for the debris to show up on the southern shores of the continent of Africa, Madagascar, and that area. So this is years in the making. Now, my concern is once they find the MH370, I believe eventually they'll find it, is that the black box might be degraded to the point where you're not going to get any data. So the mystery might not exactly be solved. Now, if it is a fire in the cockpit due to wiring that caused this whole thing, I believe that will be able to be ascertained from the debris, of the condition of the debris, because it didn't have any fuel when it went down, so it didn't explode. So there's that. But if it was an individual that caused this whole thing and the cockpit voice recorder and everything is just too degraded to get any information off of, we might never exactly know what happened on board that airplane when it went down on March 8th, 2014.
So you don't subscribe to the conspiracy theory that it landed in a hidden airstrip in Russia? That's what I'm hearing here.
Yeah, I don't, just based on, I mean, the data is out there and available for anybody that wants to cross-correlate the satellite communication data. And I have proliferally looked at it, and I do believe it was headed on a southerly course versus another northerly course based on everything that went around. So what exactly caused the plane to turn in that direction, and, you know, why was it not recoverable? Why did air traffic control not notice where this plane was? I mean, those are all mysteries. The perfect storm to lose this aircraft. And by perfect storm, I mean metaphorically, because there wasn't any storm that night.
Right. Some of the conspiracy theories that are out there are absolutely wild. If you're someone like me who enjoys just reading conspiracy theories, you can look at them and be like, there's absolutely no way this is true. But the science behind how people are trying to help find it and the radar pings and things like that, that's incredibly astounding. And the fact that they're resuming it, it's a positive sign. And based off of debris they've recovered and things like that, that probably helps them a little bit towards trying to figure out where it might be. And like SP said, I kind of believe they'll find, if not the plane, a good chunk of it at some point in time.
Right. And just think of this as a venture capitalist, right? If you find the MH370 and you're into this sort of thing, I mean, you can say you can find anything. It's a lot like what what's his name did when he found the Titanic. And it's like, okay, you know, we have this data, we have this
James
capability.
Cameron.
James,
Leonardo DiCaprio.
Sure. We'll go with that. Anyway,
Kate Winslet.
You're just jealous.
I'll never let go, Steven. I'll never let go.
Enough space, and we all know it. Enough selfish.
The Mythbusters disproved it.
Selfish.
Mythbusters disproved it.
No,
there wasn't enough room.
They proved it.
They didn't.
They proved it. Anyways, continue talking about Kate Winslet and her modeling scenes.
What are you doing?
Okay, so basically, what we have here is a bunch of venture capitalists that are looking at finding this, and there might be backed a little bit by, say, a corporation by the name of Boeing. I have not found any indication whatsoever that Boeing is interested in finding this thing. Matter of fact, they would probably prefer that they don't find it. But if there is something wrong with the cockpit wiring on board the Boeing 777, I would want to know it. I've talked about this on this podcast before, and it is something that is ultimately in my mind of curiosity, especially every time I look at taking a wide body anywhere. I go, is that going to be a Boeing 777? I don't don't know.
Okay, so I do have a question for you, though, about that. What are the odds, do you know, that we actually would be able to get anything relevant now that it's been in the ocean for so long?
So there was an Air France airliner that went down, and it was down, I believe, 2 or 3 years before they finally got the black box up, and they did recover data from the black box. I can't remember if it was the voice recorder or if it was the instrumentation, but yes, there is a possibility of getting data back. Now, what's against this is it's been down for longer and it's deeper. So I'm not sure if the black box was really designed to fend off the environment for this long. I also don't know what the conditions were before the plane went down. Like, was the plane on fire at any point in time, and how did that impact the black box? I don't know.
Well, and the pressure of where they are, if they're deep underwater, that's a lot of pressure that black box has to contend with. And while I'm sure they're rated to deal with a lot of pressure, that's a lot of pressure over an extended period of time, and SEALs will fail in that time.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, we might never know, but we might know. And the other thing, like I stated before, is because the wreckage wouldn't have gone down in a fiery explosion, that's speculation on my part, just because it didn't have a lot of fuel left, that the condition of the plane, aside from the trauma of impact, would be able to tell what happened mechanically with the plane. And if there's no mechanical signs of malfunction or danger, then you know it was human caused and not mechanically.
Fair. Next up in the news, Chris is going to tell you all about how basically the entire world of processing is just gone to hell in a handbag. Is that the phrase, or is it just gone? I don't know.
It's all pooped up.
It is all pooped up, isn't it?
All pooped up.
Everybody
poops. We're going to talk about the fact that there's been a couple vulnerabilities for processors that have been discovered. This includes processors from Intel and even other companies. What's this mean? Nearly all computers, smartphones, and servers are potentially impacted by the vulnerabilities that have been discovered. This includes companies like Apple, Amazon, Microsoft, Google, you know, people that do a lot of cloud work and sell a lot of consumer electronics. Kind of bad news. And it's got software vendors scrambling to provide software updates to their operating systems and to cloud services and to a bunch of other things. But researchers have said these software makers can't fully address the holes these chips have left open. So guys, how bad is it really? Probably not as bad as we think. Let's walk through it a little bit here. Virtually every device that runs on a modern chip, as well as cloud services, are potentially vulnerable to two different types of attacks. The first one is known as Meltdown. It seems to be limited to Intel processors made since 1995. So if you're running your Windows 95 computer still from circa 1994, you're probably okay on your Intel, 386 processor? Steven, you're good.
Yeah.
I think they had Pentiums in 95.
It could have been. That was probably a Pentium 2 then, because I think I had a Pentium 2 Compaq around that time frame. So this Meltdown issue, researchers have said, can be addressed via a software update. But there's a catch. This software update can potentially significantly impact the performance of your processor. Some people in early tests of these processor fixes found they were taking a 30% performance drop. This is the exception to the rule. It's not what you're seeing in a lot of things, but that is a pretty hefty decrease in performance if you basically lose 30% of your processing power. I don't know about you. I wouldn't like that when I'm trying to render video or edit podcasts and things like that. That's not something I really want. And this is from 1995 on Intel processors that are vulnerable. So we're talking millions upon millions. And I only talked about it from the perspective of a regular user. This doesn't include the fact that Intel processors are used in many servers and hardware like that. So you could see cloud computing impacted. And in fact, Epic Games did say that they saw performance hits for people playing Fortnite Battle Royale on their patched servers, and the Fortnite servers were not stable the first few days after they applied their patches to Meltdown. So it does seem to be that the performance issues are in fact real.
The good news though is that this only affects like the majority of the world, right?
Well, it's kind of it sounds worse than it actually is. Now, there is a vulnerability there, but from what I've been able to tell from reading and things like that, you actually have to have a compromised system for someone to be able to get in and make use of that. There has to be some way for someone to gain access to your computer to do it. So you have to have been compromised in some manner first. So that's the silver lining. If you're not compromised, they can't use this exploit from what I can tell.
You know, it makes you question, though, do you want to apply the patch when you're seeing performance increases? Because you're right, it's not everybody. And there are a lot of studies, if you look at this, that people have said, no, we have done many, many game benchmarks and there is no effect at all. And then you see the opposite. Do you want a chance that you are the opposite? By whatever reason your tasks are involving, you end up being the rare exception. Do you want a chance that when the odds are so slim that someone's going to exploit this?
Well, so I think you have to look at it from two standpoints. You have to look at it from a company standpoint and from a personal standpoint. From a personal standpoint, you can choose to take that risk and that's okay. From a company standpoint, I don't want Amazon to take that risk because that then would potentially compromise my information. I don't want Google or Microsoft to take that risk either. So from their standpoint, I think they have to take the hit in order to ensure consumer confidence, for lack of a better term. Now, from a personal standpoint, I'm going to apply the patch at some point, but I'm not rushing out immediately to apply it because I'm not super concerned that I'm compromised right now because I've done a pretty good job of locking down my computer, making it hard. I don't go to random websites and click, yes, install this toolbar and see what happens.
Wait, that you're not supposed to put in there's random toolbars? This is news to me.
Yeah, Steven. We're going to have to talk later, but we don't want any files from you.
It's got little animations on it. Like, it's got a little graphic, a GIF of SP dancing.
Well, that's always cool to have, but I want the little paperclip back. I want Clippy back.
Clippy. Yeah.
So my take on this whole thing is eventually I'm going to want a fixed processor. So my question ultimately is, when are we going to see fixed processors that are able to get their full performance values back on the market?
So that's the question. That is the question, is will that be what happens, or will it just be the fact that we now have to accept that the new benchmark is lower? And that's my theory on it, because of the fact that there are certain AMD processors which are not affected by one of them. There's two main. There's one called Meltdown, one called Spectre. Is that the other one?
That's what I was going to get to here in a few. Yeah.
So AMD is not affected. Some of AMD, or actually all of AMD, is not affected by one of them. And for we've known for years, Intel has pushed and pushed and pushed and led AMD until recent. So is that because they didn't use whatever this gap was? And now we have to accept that AMD was actually more in line with what the new benchmark's going to be. Conspiracy theory.
I don't know. It's going to take a little research to know what actually happened in this regard. The fact of the matter is, it's a vulnerability that exists across generations of processors. Supposedly, they have addressed it so that future versions of these processors will not have this vulnerability. And you can mostly address it via a software update and a BIOS update. The real question will be, can the researchers figure out what the 100% fix is that doesn't cripple your machine?
Will that exist? That's the question. And that's what I was getting at, is I don't know that it's going to exist.
You put enough time and money into something, you'll find a solution. And let's be honest, if you're Intel right now, this is a black eye. You have to figure something out. The other black eye, which I wasn't even going to mention, but I'll mention real quick, is like a week before this got mentioned, the Intel CEO sold off like $32 million worth of stock also.
Mm-hmm. You know what? There is this company called Equifax. Okay, let's just leave that alone.
So let's... Intel screwed up, but there's other problems too. Like Steven mentioned, there's another exploit called Spectre that's going to affect all manner of modern chips. This includes processors from AMD, as well as ARM-based chips like you'd see in smartphones and other devices. So theoretically, your cell phone could be compromised. This includes Apple cell phones as well, Android, Apple, Windows. Anything that uses an ARM processor could potentially be exploited, and some AMD processors. It's a harder issue to exploit and harder to address, but again, there's no cure-all that they've discovered yet. And then finally, it gets a little worse. Researchers also demonstrated how a similar attack could also be used within a browser, such as Chrome and Firefox and things like that. So Mozilla, Google, and other browser makers are updating those programs to protect you from Spectre and from Meltdown. So guys, this is some bad news. It's not great news. Don't worry, there's some reasons we can worry a little less as we go on, but it's not great news right now.
So what you're saying is that we should just throw out all of the technology.
I was Send it to me, right. And I'll take care of it for you, especially if you have any Microsoft Surface Books, because I'd love to have one as a new toy to play with.
I have so much computing equipment in my house because I've got three college-age kids. And of course, I've got all this podcasting gear, and we've got other computer equipment in the house to do various different tasks or whatever. I don't have enough money in my retirement savings to go out and replace all of this equipment simultaneously. So odds are people like me are going to have affected processors in their house for quite some time.
You know, and it's not just in your house, because you got to remember that this affects more than just desktop and laptop devices. As Chris said, this affects a lot of different processors, and we've all seen how Apple and Android, and don't get me started on these other operating systems that came and went, stop patching stuff after a couple of years. You're screwed. Those devices will not get an update. So it's just like, it's mind-blowing. This is, remember a few months back, we talked about how horrible that big Wi-Fi bug was? Yeah, this is worse. This is a hell of a lot worse. So, yay. Go all team. Right.
Yeah, so let's get into the background about how did we find out about this? Researchers from Google's Project Zero and some other security experts found the issue last year when it was then reported to AMD, Intel, and ARM in last June. Since then, the companies were given time to begin working on solutions, and all of the affected companies had planned to disclose the vulnerability this week as we record the episode, but had to move forward with the announcement details because it began to leak out early with the proof of concept code. So they were getting ready to move. Security researchers and other places found out about it and started talking about this vulnerability. Luckily, all of the stuff that has come out publicly from the White Hat hackers and stuff like that has not disclosed the proper ways to make use of this vulnerability to inject malicious code. The White Hat community has been pretty helpful in that regard for not putting out public information for Steven to come and screw with my computer.
Anybody looked at the dark web in recent? I'm sure it's all over there. It's all about the dark web.
I'm sure it is too.
I'm all about the dark web.
The last time I was in the dark room, I couldn't read anything because it was all dark.
Here's the good news, though. Industry has begun addressing these issues. Microsoft has already issued updates for Windows 10, Windows 8, and Windows 7, as well as their Azure cloud operating system. I've already downloaded the update for my Surface Pro 4. It took a half hour for it all to install because it was fairly in-depth, but I have had no performance decrease that I have noticed at this point in time. So seemed to be okay there. Amazon said last week on Wednesday afternoon, all but a small single-digit percentage of instances across the Amazon EC2 fleet were already protected, with the remaining ones set to be finished in a few hours. So Amazon Cloud should be relatively safe. Forgot to mention, Phil Spencer, the head of Xbox division at Microsoft, had already said the security posture they adopted with and the architecture they adopted for the Xbox ensured that it was safe from Spectre and Meltdown. So the Xbox is safe. Google said it's released updates to Android and Chrome OS to address the issue, and it has a feature in Chrome right now that users should turn on to start out at this feature called Site Isolation. You can find some FAQs online on how to do that. However, the January 26th release of Google Chrome will have the full-blown update for Meltdown and Spectre in place for it. Here's where it gets more interesting. Intel has said it's begun working with operating system vendors and hardware makers industry-wide on approaches to address the issue and will also design future chips to avoid it. And finally, today as we record this on January 8th, 2018, Apple released their updates for iOS, tvOS, and all of their other OSs. that addresses the Spectre issue. So there are patches that are coming out. We'll just have to wait and see whether it solves the problem fully and what kind of negative repercussions it might have. And let's be honest, guys, in most cases, standard user X probably not going to notice a ton of slowdown if there is, because most of our devices have more processing power than we utilize 90% of the time. That doesn't make it okay. I'm just saying you're less likely to notice it if there is a takedown.
The good news is, though, I just upgraded my personal CPU, like the one within me myself, like right now. And so far, I'm not seeing any problems at all, 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 any problems at all.
I see what you did there.
All right, so S&P, you are holding up your phone. You want to say something about it.
Yeah, so this is an iPhone 5S, so I'm guessing between the battery and the chip, I probably should just throw this in the toilet.
Don't forget the Wi-Fi.
I guess it depends on what your use case is for your iPhone 5S. Do you use it for anything that you would be concerned if it was vulnerable? I mean, if you're just using it to play music, who gives a crap?
I use it to stream stuff, stream podcasts while I'm mowing the lawn. Or snow blowing the driveway or whatever.
The 5S still supported by iOS? Do they still put updates out for that? I'm not sure.
I think they cut it off at 6 this last time.
Okay. Yeah, so that'll be the interesting thing that comes up. And the real interesting thing we'll see that I didn't even think of until right now when we mentioned that the 5S might be cut off is Windows XP, not supported anymore. Microsoft stopped officially supporting it, but they've had to put out some patches for major vulnerabilities that have come up to support it for those people that haven't upgraded, because it's everywhere still. Is Microsoft going to try and help put something out for those legacy XP machines that are out there? I don't know, because think about it. That's a pretty big botnet you could potentially exploit if there's a bunch of old XP machines out there still running things, and there's a bunch of old XP machines out there running things, guys.
True.
My bad. iPhone 5S is compatible with iOS 11. So, yeah, this is one of the new phones that are still in the updatable version, at least for now. I would guess when iOS 12 comes out, they won't be supported anymore.
Probably not.
Well, thanks for telling us about that, Chris. If you hadn't heard about that already, you can thank Chris for the panic that you're now feeling.
Yes. My advice to you is to begin panicking now and then drink heavily until you feel better about it.
Don't panic and always carry a towel.
And send your technology to Chris.
Don't forget to bring a towel.
Finally, in our news, we've got the extra news section. We'll just run down a couple of quick picks here. Number one, Lenovo and Google have created their own Echo Show-like device that supports YouTube. What a shocker that Google made a device that is just like an Amazon device. That's right. This week, they did announce that they partnered with Lenovo to build a new smart display platform. That looks exactly like the Echo Show. Okay, that's what it looks like. It's meant for the same sort of application. Currently, there's Google Duo support, there's Google Map support, YouTube playback, and even Google Photos. The software is in a very early state at the moment. There is still showing signs of promise within this device. So, interesting to see.
So Google Maps support, so what you're supposed to do is turn on your car's Wi-Fi and then use this in your car via the car Wi-Fi and suck up all the data through your car Wi-Fi just using Google Maps, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Definitely. Mm-hmm. And plus YouTube, of course.
Or you just set your phone's hotspot mode on. You could do that too.
And also, Google has announced a brand new product called, wait for it, Google Pay. That's right. In a Google blog post, Vice President of Product Management of Payments came out and said that they are rebranding and consolidating their brands. You might have heard of this wonderful thing called Android Pay. It's the very similar platform to Apple Pay. You might have also heard of this thing called Google Wallet, which has been around forever for peer-to-peer. They're putting the two of them together into Google Pay. Why they didn't just take Google Wallet and integrate it with Android Pay beyond me, I guess is the old Android name. But
don't forget,
weird.
They split those out like 3 years ago. They used to be integrated in Google Wallet, and then they split Android Pay and Google Wallet into separate things.
So dumb.
So I'm going to wait until they rebrand again to Alphabet Pay. For those of you that don't know, Alphabet is the parent company to Google.
Can you tell me how to pay? Pay
fair
Alphabet
use, fair
pay.
Use, fair use, fair use, fair use. Sorry, had to help you out there.
I don't get it, but you know what? It's news, and now there's a whole bunch of people who are out there rebranding all of their drive-through billboards and all of their other stuff that says Android Pay all over it. They're just rebranding it all right now.
I mean, Steven, I know you have Android devices. SP, I know you don't. Do you use Android Pay or Google Wallet at all? Has it been a tool that you've used?
I actually have, just for S&Gs. I have to say that that's something that I what? Okay, go ahead.
I've got an Android device, Chris. It's right here.
I didn't realize
it's in my hand.
I didn't realize you'd switched yet. I'm sorry.
Is that, that's
retract.
Old gen. That's the old one note, isn't
yeah,
it?
This yeah, this is a Note 3, but yeah, I still okay. have an Android device here. Oh. You said I didn't have Android. I have it right here.
No, I have used it from time to time. I had high ambitions when it finally came to Canada, but I just have been using my card, continued to be. But there's a couple of times where it saved me.
I don't use Android Pay very often to actually pay for transactions at a store, but it is great for keeping track of loyalty cards and gift cards. So I keep like my Sheets card in there, my Office Depot card, my Regal Cinemas card. I have Regal Cinemas gift cards on there, which actually track really well because it just pulls up the barcode, they scan it, and you hit the refresh button, it shows you your current total. So Android Pay has its benefits. Google Wallet I actually used for the first time this weekend. It's basically PayPal. My buddy paid for something. I was like, I owe you money for that. Let me send you money. Do you use PayPal? He goes, no, I use Google Wallet. And it was surprisingly easy, actually.
Well, I'm just going to go ahead and hold up my phone to the camera, and then you can go ahead and just steal my information. Beep. There you go.
That's Let me get works. That QR code real quick. We'll be good to go.
All right. If you got anything that you want to suggest to us for a future episode of the GunnaGeek.com show, please do email us at show@GunnaGeek.com. If you got a news article that you think we should talk about, fire it over to us because we're adaptable. We've got a couple spots we can talk about in the show, and we absolutely are willing to have you suggest topics for us, such as this week's suggestion, which was the fact that apparently the moon landing was not real. So SP will tell you all about that next week. Let's go ahead and move on to Steven's geeky stuff.
There's something that has Steven's attention. So much so that he's itching to talk to you about it. What is this something? You're about to find out. This is Steven's geeky stuff.
Yes, indeed. It's Steven's geeky stuff. First off, before we continue, let me give you fair warning. If you use an Amazon voice service device, please head on over and hit that wonderful microphone button and mute it now, because I'm about to say Alexa. That's right, indeed. We're talking today about a new addition in my realm. It is the wonderful Amazon Echo Plus. Ooh, I did indeed over the Christmas holidays get fortunate enough to have this gifted to myself. Now, I will say that first off, it was my dad that gave it to me, so I appreciate him embracing my crazy home automation ways, and thank you very much for that. But the reason why this was even on my radar, because obviously he knew it was on my radar, was because I've been looking to expand my Amazon Echo devices. I've talked about this on the show before. I have an Echo Dot that I have had for a little while, and it officially finally came to Canada. And just comparing this to Google Home, I wanted to make a decision. It's so useful for me with home automation, and I decided that I was going to go the Amazon system. So I wanted to get something in my kitchen, but I also was hoping to find something that would have a speaker good enough that I could use it for day-to-day use. If I'm cooking or whatever, I wanted to be able to play some sound through it. So the Echo Plus was on my radar because of that. And the other thing is their Echo Plus has the integration of Philips Hue. So if I ever find a good sale on like a clearance Philips Hue bulb or something like that, the Echo Plus will pair right with it. And then I don't need to worry so much about having to get a bridge. And a bonus, the package actually came at the moment with a Philips Hue bulb in it. So I've paired that up, which is kind of cool because now I got a Hue bulb. Now, what are my initial thoughts on the Echo Plus? Well, first off, the size is approximately about what the original Echo was. So it's about that size. If you from what I know, I don't have one here, but from what I've seen, it's about the same size. The new Echo, the second generation Echo, is a little bit shorter now, but the Echo Plus is more in line with that cylinder. It fits well within my house, and it doesn't take up too much room because of that. Now, the thing with the size of that is that the power block is weirdly large. It's a square block that if you plug it in with, like, you know, one of those outlet splitters, like either the 3 or the 6, it's going to block the outlet next to it. It's just that big, which is really odd to me that these bigger devices are using bigger blocks, but the Google Home was the same way from what I saw. But it is a trade-off. I'll just have to get another. I'll put an extension cord on an extension cord on an extension cord. And next thing you know, well,
house is going to burn down.
Yeah, pretty much.
That'd be a problem.
That would be a problem. The device itself has a new design over previous units. If you've ever seen an Echo device, you're familiar. It has 4 buttons on it. It has a microphone mute button. It has an action button. And then it has a up volume and a lower volume. The Echo Plus changes things a little bit. The Echo Plus just has 2 buttons on it and then has a dial that you turn and you twist in order to turn the volume up and down. So it removes the up and down buttons. Now,
which is the same, by the way, as the first generation Echoes.
And the first generation Echo Dot.
Oh, I thought the first generation Echo did not have the twist on it.
Nope, I have first generation one upstairs. It's okay. Twist on it.
My misunderstanding. So it's different than the Echo Dot, which is a lot of people are familiar with. Sorry, I misspoke on that then. But it's got the twist on it. Now, the thing that I'm not sure about with the twist on is what's the longevity of it going to be compared to a button? And as well, you're going to notice when you've used one of those, if you use it in an area that you got greasy hands, you now have grease on the side, as opposed to the Echo Dot format, where all your grease just sits on the top. So then you're not getting it on the sides.
Why would you touch it when you could just tell it what volume level that you want?
Yeah, that's your trade-off. You just be like, a word, set volume to something 1 through 10.
We already told people, you can say Alexa. Say Alexa.
I know, but this is force of habit for me so that I don't do it later. I don't want to break this habit I've developed.
Some people still like to use physical controls. On the other hand, I think that it's
like
much
the 1900s?
Faster. I think that it's much faster to do that than it is to tell her to turn up the volume or push the button a few times, okay? The other thing as well with the whole look and feel of the Echo Plus is that it feels like an Echo, which if you're, you know, wanting to embrace the way of trend setting and get some cloths and stuff, you're not getting that with the Echo Plus yet unless you get a third party. So out of the box, it's a little old, okay? So that's my initial thoughts on that. Now, as for the sound itself, the Echo Plus has the better speaker in it compared to the other devices. That's what the Echo Plus was designed for, aside from being a, quote, hub, which they all are hubs, but that's what Amazon tried to spin it as. The sound is supposed to be better. I will say that the sound is good, but you're definitely not raving with it, Chris. I'm sorry. I'm not throwing you your bachelor party with just this speaker. It's not going to get loud enough. We're not going to be able to get the pole dancing guy in here. It's just not going to happen.
Why would I want to have my bachelor party in Canada?
That's a good question, and I don't have an answer for that.
Yeah, that's a good question. Also, can't you group a bunch of them together and simultaneously play and have them all in the house?
Okay, we'll put them all in a row. So there you go. But without putting them all in a row, you're not going to end up having...
Why would you put them in a row? Have you never put together a 5.1 sound system before?
Okay, you're not going to... Okay. Contrary, aside from getting a bunch of these and putting them together, you're not getting a ton of volume out of them. There's a certain limit with them. It's good enough for the average room, but if you really want to crank up the sound, it's not going to happen. Because of that, they're like, joking aside, I am likely leaving my speakers that I have in my kitchen in there, because occasionally I do just like to crank up music and be obnoxious and just have a little bit of loud music playing. This will go reasonably loud, but it won't go to that annoying loud, which is what I like to do occasionally and pee off my neighbors. But no, it's not going to replace the Sonos speaker or something like that. That's ultimately what it comes down to. But it does work pretty well. I will say from a sound quality perspective, the lower end is noticeably more full as it gets louder. When you're a little bit quiet, like in sort of the quarter volume, it really just doesn't sound like it's anything exceptional. You turn it up to about half and that's when the speaker really starts to shine.
So you're talking about the lower end of the device itself, like the bottom of the device? Is that what you're talking about?
I'm talking about like the bass range, the lower frequencies, okay?
Oh, lower frequencies. Lower frequencies. You said the bass and that's the bottom of the device
as
well.
You know what? Those of you who want to know about whether or not the sound comes from the upper or the bottom, I will just let you know that the holes on the speaker are on the lower half of the cylinder. So it is generally in the lower half of the cylinder, just to answer SP's question.
Is the speaker omnidirectional or is it directional?
It is an omnidirectional speaker. I will say this. You actually lead me perfectly to my next point as far as the sound goes. Is that placement of this device is key. I originally took it and I had it against my wall in my kitchen underneath my cabinets, and it sounded crappy. As soon as I pulled it out just a few inches, I ended up finding that the sound just was much more full. Even though it was still under the cabinet, it was just butted up against the wall. It wasn't allowed to basically doing its thing. Bringing it out a little bit, it sounded a heck of a lot better. So it's working great for the kitchen. I'm happy I have it. Yesterday I was cooking and I turned it up and it was quite adequate for what I wanted. I'm very happy to have it in my kitchen. And I will say that more often than not, I'll just be using the speaker right within it. But if you are one of those people who just want to crank it up and really listen to some good quality sound, you're not getting that out of the Echo Plus, contrary to what they might say. I've played with a lot of speakers of $100 to $200 range, and you're not getting that. As for the audio pickup, talking to the Alexa device, audio pickup on this far better than the Echo Dots that I have. I have to say that with the Echo Dots, a lot of times I have to turn down the TV or turn down the radio or whatever and then speak up. With the Echo Plus, it's got really good pickup. In fact, my kitchen, where it's at, is next to my living room. And people who are in the living room at the kitchen side of things, sometimes if they're trying to talk to Alexa, the kitchen one will actually pick it up instead of the living room where they're at, because it's just a little bit more sensitive and they're just a little bit closer to it. Really good pickup on it. And I far less hear it misunderstand me than I do on my Echo Dot. I will say this as well, that as far as it responding back to me, the voice is clear, doesn't sound super tinny like the Dot, which is nice. Now, as for the multi-room audio side of things that SP talked about a little bit earlier, I had a chance now to dabble with this since I got more than one device. And I will say, from my perspective as a Canadian user who has never uploaded any music up to the Amazon Music services, it just is not as good as the Google multi-room experience, in my opinion. However, it's adequate for many people. The only thing that's a little bit odd is that you can't play Amazon Music you can't use it on two different devices at one time, which is kind of odd to me, but it is what it is.
Bear in mind also, you can multi-room stream using Pandora, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn and things like that too, because I do that in my house.
Yes,
right now.
Absolutely.
But you've only got two devices, so you probably haven't run into this weird issue. If you do groups, that's great, but you can't have one device in multiple groups. So meaning for me, I have my upstairs group, my downstairs group, my basement group, and I wanted to build an everywhere group that was every device in my house. Well, I couldn't do it because all those devices were already in another group. So you can only have one group per device, which is kind of annoying to me.
I didn't know that. I actually did end up getting a third Amazon device for the den. I do have an Echo Dot down in the den now. And I will say that I haven't had a chance to experiment with that, but it is very handy just having it here. I was looking forward to doing two different groups, but apparently that's not the case. I won't be able to do that. Thanks for bursting my bubble. Really appreciate that. Now I'm going to cry.
That's what we're here for, to make you cry.
Well, that being said, I wouldn't be shocked if Amazon made a change to it eventually, because universal reaction from people has been like, well, this doesn't make sense. This is annoying. I understand why they did it that way, though, because they don't want me to be like, hey, play all my music downstairs, and then have someone else be like, play my music in group B, which includes one of those same devices, because then you have a conflict. So they're going to have to figure out a way to do that in.
Yeah, I will say, though, as far as the Amazon Echo Plus goes, I'm very happy with it. It's a great addition. I kind of really wanted to try to justify having just the regular Echo in the den so that I could compare the Echo to the Echo Plus, but I don't have that comparison for you, sorry. But from an Echo Plus perspective, to me, it was nice to just have that possibility of Philip Hue down the road. The Amazon Alexa app has gotten so good that it's now my go-to way to control my home automation overall. I find myself going into that far more than my Wink app now. And because of that, I can really just expand and use Alexa as my bridge. I can get Wemo involved and everything. So just having this Echo Plus allow me one day to be able to go and get a Philips Hue device if I want to is nice to have that possibility. So there you go. That's my quick thoughts on the Amazon Echo Plus.
Have you played any with the drop-in features on there yet?
I did slightly experiment a little bit with that. I shut it off pretty quickly, but I did do a little bit of a test. I have done an Echo to Echo call. I've done two of them now, which was really fun. Three of them now. And one of them was to SP, and he's like, "What do you want?" So that was kind of fun.
Yes,
so.
Because I pulled up my Amazon Alexa app to see which of my friends would let me drop in on. And there I see it's pulled from my address book, 1 Stephen John Drew. So theoretically, I could drop in on you right now, Stephen.
You couldn't drop in. You could call me. There's a difference.
I could call you. Yeah, let me rephrase. I could call you right now, Stephen.
Alexa, call Chris Farrell.
Calling Chris Farrell.
So there you go. So anyways,
and it just set my Echo off saying you were calling.
I want SP, while we're talking about Amazon devices, you said that you had a bit of experience with a new Echo device yourself, and I wanted to give you a moment here to talk about it.
Yeah, so for Christmas, I bought my mom an Echo Show because I bought her an Echo last year and she got to use it. It was really an advanced device for them. They really enjoyed it, especially the shopping list. Matter of fact, they liked it so much that I got them one for the vacation home as well. So they had one in each place. And actually, when I got one for the vacation home, they're like, "Oh, thank God, we missed our shopping list. We really needed it." So that told me, and that was during the summer around the 4th of July last year that came in. So that really told me that they had really endeared themselves to these devices. So when Amazon came out with a few new devices this year, I'm like, you know what? I think I'm going to try something with my parents. And I gave them an Echo Show for the holidays. Now, this Echo Show, it was the white one, and I was slightly disappointed. I didn't do a lot of research into them before I got it. I just knew it had the 7-inch video screen and was basically in an Echo with the video screen that you put in your home where you would put a normal Echo. And I didn't realize that the face of the device was black. It's not all white. It is partially white, partially black. The case is white and the actual face of it is black where it doesn't have the video screen. So that was slightly disappointing to me, but at the same time, like, whatever. It's not going in my house, so I don't have to worry about it. So that was interesting. I only got to play with it for about a half an hour, so not too much. But I did discover that the setup was different than a normal Echo because you could do it with touchscreen, because the screen is not just a display screen, it's actually touchscreen. So you could actually control some of the functionality by touch. And it made setup a lot easier because I could just throw in the Wi-Fi password right in there. And it worked, and it would set it up. And, you know, it takes a few minutes to upload the latest OS, whatever update it's working on. And then, boom, it's there. So it had the video call feature, which was pretty nice. My mom actually called me, and I had the weird Echo thing going on because I was standing right there. I'm like, "Mom, let me get away from this. Oh my gosh." You know, the microphone and the speakers and whatever were, had a little bit of feedback going there, but yeah, it worked and that was good. So I was thinking that my sister, who's mentally handicapped, she's a younger sister of mine, could actually use it in place of FaceTime to start calling me on my phone. And she has not done that too much, but I'll give her a call in the next week here and see if she really wants to do that. It's in the kitchen at my parents' house, or at least it was when I left. Mom told me that she moved her regular Echo into the bedroom to use as an alarm. Okay. They don't have too many smart devices yet, it's coming with future gifts. So we'll just leave that as it was. And then also, I did discover that in addition to the video calling, you could take selfies. You could say, hey, take a picture, and boom, it takes a picture with whatever it's pointing at. I mean, usually it's pointing slightly up and out, so you have to kind of lean over it a little bit in order to get the picture, but it can take selfies, and the camera's not all that bad. It's not all that great, but it's not all that bad. And then you can play Amazon Video through it. So if you have Amazon Prime, you can play video through it. So I did try playing the Grand Tour through it. So that was interesting. But as I was doing all this stuff, I'm like, my God, the speaker sucks. It really sucks. This does not sound good at all. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I just bought this nearly $200 device. And the speaker sound, I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry. Well, maybe you get some use out of it. So like I said, I only got to play around with it a half an hour. I left shortly thereafter and wasn't around. Now, my son stayed behind for a couple of days. And so he texts me like 2 days later. And he goes, Dad, you're never going to believe this. And I said, what? You're a dumbass. I'm like, okay, thanks. what specific, you know, sons call their dad dumbasses all the time, right? So he goes, yeah, we got a great laugh out of the Amazon show. I'm like, well, what do you mean? Or the Echo show. Yeah, it sounds just fine. I said, what do you mean it sounds fine? It sounded like crap. He's like, you didn't take the plastic off the speaker.
That's fantastic.
In my defense, there was a plastic wrap that went around the entire thing, and I felt and looked for a plastic wrap on the speaker, could not find it, could not find any tab, didn't feel like it was plastic. So in my defense, I thought I had taken care of it, but obviously I didn't. And they said it sounded just fine after they took the speaker off. It is one dimensional, or it is one directional, because it doesn't go all the way around it. So it's a little bit different than the Echo or Echo Plus. And they use it for on-screen weather, where you can scroll. Like right now, if you ask your A device for weather, it'll give you like the day. And if you ask it for tomorrow's weather, it'll give you tomorrow's weather of the day, but you don't get to see an extended forecast. Well, using the touchscreen, you can actually page through and see the extended forecast visually. You can see the timers visually, which is very unique. Like, Chris, you use yours to cook, right?
I do. I've used it for multiple timers. In fact, this evening I was making a chicken breast in the oven, and I also put some rice on, so I had two separate timers going in. Then I used If This Then That to push those timers to my TV when they went off, just because why not?
Well, that's unique. So this, you don't have to use If Then That. You just simply see the timer come up. You say, you know, device, show me the timer, and boom, it's right there. So that's pretty cool. And my younger sister uses it to tell jokes. Okay. You know, that's pretty cool that she's able to interface with it and do that. So, and it's good that they have another device to create shopping lists around. Now, they don't have any dots in the house. They simply have the Echo and the Echo Show. So I'm interested to see how that progresses. Now, talking about the Echo Dots, I also have an Echo Dot. Is it okay if I tell the Echo Dot story here?
Yeah, we got a few more minutes.
Are you sure? Okay. So I bought the kids all Echo Dots. Their significant others, themselves, they all got an Echo Dot. Echo Dots for everyone.
You get an Echo Dot. Everyone gets an Echo Dot.
It's exactly what I did. So everybody got the Echo Dot. And I said, I have one condition, because I figured this out, because I was walking from Echo to Echo in my house. And I left one playing holiday music and I went to another one. And I said, play holiday music. He said, we can't do that because it's already playing on another device. I'm like, oh crap, this sucks. I don't want the kids playing music and then me not being able to play music. So I said, you guys need to get your own Amazon account. You don't have to pay for Prime. Just get your own Amazon account, and then you can stream whatever music you want. Well, here's the problem. These things are not dorm ready. And what do I mean by that? I mean, if you have several different Echoes in the same house. Now, if they're on one account, they deconflict. If they're on different accounts, they don't even know that there's another Echo device in the house. So if you're in the kitchen and you're loud and you say a word, set a timer for 5 minutes. Yeah, every single Echo that's going to hear you that's on a different account also sets a timer for 5 minutes. So in 5 minutes, you have five different devices that are going off, and you have a problem turning them off, turning the timer off.
I'm
so,
not
yeah.
seeing the problem, because all I would do is just go around and just yell at the top of my lungs, "Alexa, Simon says Steven is the greatest." And then everybody would just say it, and it would just be truth.
Yeah, so there's problems. I can imagine the fun that college students would have, like you, if you're in a dorm and you had like 50 of these on a floor that could all hear one person yell out the commands. So that is why I say they're not dorm ready. And definitely if you live in a house with multiple people, it's not conducive to that environment. So just be careful if you're in the same house, but you're like your roommates, you got a roommate and they have a dot in their room and you have a dot in your room. They both can receive the same commands, and that could be problematic. So yeah, that is a problem. And then, yeah, the music thing, I wish there was a way to solve that, because if there was, then I wouldn't mind having it all in the same account. But I also wanted to take them a little bit responsible. Like my daughters, but they both have hubs, Harmony hubs. You can only control one Harmony hub via the Alexa, via normal stuff. Steven, I know you did some programming to get around that, but I wanted them to be able to actually control it with their own dot in their room, and that meant that it had to be on a different account. So there's reasons and rationales why I did what I did, and they're also learning on what do they want to use it to integrate into their lives, because you and I and Chris, we use it a certain way. Kids, that's an entirely different story, because they don't actually, none of my kids are the owners of the house that they're in, so the smart home thing, I'm not sure it's grabbing them as much as it is you and I.
Well, real quick, one thing they did put in there, which has helped in my house with people having multiple accounts, you can train it to your voice. So at this point, it now knows if it hears me say, "Hey, A word, what's new?" It says, "Chris, here is your flash briefing," and plays my flash briefing. So if you have multiple people that you have using one, you can do training in that regard to try and limit them from accessing your Amazon account as much. You'll have to play with it some.
So you're not creative enough to actually have it call you a different name? Like, all my devices call me Crom.
Well, I mean, I can have it call me whatever I want, but I signed up for it all to be Chris.
Okay.
Well, thanks for sharing that. I appreciate that. And we hope that that Amazon talk has helped you a little bit if you're thinking about getting a device. But that is going to go ahead and take us to the end of the show. Before we wrap up, I'll just remind you that we are part of the Gunna Geek Network. A lot of really good shows on the network and many coming, including our latest member, The Intellectual Podcast. Please check that out at GunnaGeekNetwork.com, and we'll just roll them in this week, and we'll be back with telling you a little bit more about them next week when they're all set up and going. So check that out. That's GunnaGeekNetwork.com. And again, I want to take this moment to say congratulations again to Chris Farrell. It's sincerely, I know we joked about it at the top of the show, but I do sincerely congratulate you on your engagement.
Thank you.
But that is the end of episode 222 of the official GunnaGeek.com show. I'm Steven John Drew saying, Suncast, thanks so much for my Christmas gift. It was awesome.
Hey, I'm SP saying congratulations to intellectuals with an X, and my condolences to the future, Mrs. Chris.
And I'm Chris Farrell saying, guys, it's safe to unmute your Amazon Voice Services devices right now, so go ahead and do it.
Alexa, subscribe to the GunnaGeek.com show. Bye!
Thanks for checking out another episode of the GunnaGeek.com show. If you enjoyed it, please give us a 5-star review in iTunes or a thumbs up on YouTube. We encourage you to send your feedback by email to show@GunnaGeek.com. You can find our entire archive at GunnaGeek.com/show. And while you're there, why not check out all of the other geeky content on the Gunna Geek Network? Want to chime into our live chat? Join us Mondays at 8:45 p.m. Eastern at www.geeks.live. The music heard on this show is by Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com. This show was produced and edited by Stephen John Drew of Gunna Geek Productions. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you again next week.